Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Global Fact Radio. Global Fact Radio brings you such shows as Conscious Living, How To with Dean Clifford, and Truth Talk. Don't you know that you can count me out? Don't you know it's gonna be alright? Alright. Alright. Today, featuring How To with Dean Clifford.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to episode 3 of How To Dean Clifford. Today is Monday, November 19th, 2012, and I'm your host once again, Tony Boutros, with the star of our show, Dean Clifford. And I have to unmute Dean's mic here. Dean, you there?
I'm certainly here.
Perfect. So as usual, ladies and gentlemen, we normally start off with our announcements, and then we give the floor to Dean to start his topic for today, which is about jurisdiction. So remember to, if you haven't done so already, to go to our episode page or our main page, which is blogtalkradio.com/globalfactradio. So that's blogtalkradio.com/globalfactradio. And when you're there, click on the blue follow button. That way you'll be notified of future episodes and also helps us with our rankings. If you wish to ask Dean questions on the air, you can do so by dialing 646-478-5728. And that's already been put up on the chat room. Once again, at 646-478-5728. And this is a long-distance call for those of you who don't have free long distance calling to the U.S., but you can do it for free if you go to our episode page and you'll see the call-in number there. To the right of that number, you'll see the Skype icon. You click on that and follow the screen prompt, and it becomes the Skype-to-Skype call, which is completely free. To ask questions in the chat room, you can also do so, but you must be logged in using either your Facebook or your Twitter account. I want to make a request today. Last week, there was so much going on, people commenting and stuff, that it was hard for me to track the questions that were on the the chat room. If you can help me out by if you're asking a question, put it in red text, bold. That way it will stand out over the other comments, and I can read them quicker. Because I'm going to be jumping a lot of screens today. I have questions that came in by email, questions I put on the fan page, and so on and so on. And there are a lot of questions that have been already prepared for Dean, so I'll be jumping between screens. I don't want to miss any questions in the chat room. reminder that December 9th, 2012, we're hosting two special guests, Foster and Kimberly Gamble, the makers of the movie Thrive. They're going to be our guests on Conscious Living. And that's December 9th at 3 p.m. Pacific. I also want to remind you that we have a third show on Global Fact Radio every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern. Is that Eastern? No, that's Pacific, sorry. 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. And that's Truth Talk with our host, two hosts actually, Chance George and Paul Webster. That show is getting good rankings, too. If you haven't listened to one of the episodes, I recommend you do. Let me see here. That's pretty much it for announcements. Oh, we've been getting a lot of good feedback on the show, and thank you for those of you for the nice feedback and encouragement you've given us. I know you're enjoying the show very much, and I want to thank you on the air. I'm kind of overwhelmed with the amount of response we're getting, Dean, on the show. So that's pretty much all I can think of. So, Dean, whenever you're ready, you can start teaching the folks about jurisdiction.
Okay. Was there anything that we wanted to pick up or just comment on from last time there? Anything that we'd left open or?
Actually, there were a couple of questions that were, there's two or three general questions that were not about last week's episode.
Okay.
And they're not about today's episode either, but they're general questions. We can cover those when we do the Q&A period.
Yeah, towards the end. Yeah, we'll see how long I can stay on for tonight here. I actually have a ton of paperwork to do. I got to fly out of here tomorrow. I got a hearing in BC Wednesday for that private prosecution I want to be out there for. So,
All right, prep work.
Yeah, I got a bit of prep work I got to do before that. So that should be an interesting one. We'll see what happens with that. So today we were going to just talk vaguely. I guess like every single one of these is basically introductory. Well, we try to keep it at introductory level. You almost can't because you kind of have to get into it to get to the real core understanding at the bottom of all this. Otherwise, it just kind of sounds like gibberish. But I guess we were going to start talking about jurisdiction this week and how they establish jurisdiction or how they claim to establish jurisdiction and what they're actually doing when they charge you and who they're actually charging and what the jurisdiction is of. Seems like most people's problems are with provincial court, which is summary conviction, which means a traffic ticket, some kind of a bylaw, driving without a license, some other fine of some kind where there's actually no injured party in any way, shape, or form other than an alleged statute that you've broken, which is probably about the 50,000th one you've broken that day because you have no idea how much of this horseshit is actually on the books. So that's probably a real good place to start. And I think, and again, this all comes back to, you almost have to touch on ownership again, because the common misconception people have is that the minute you have the people's belief on this right now, and I just got an email on this today, a link to a 15-minute video from a guy over in the UK, and I love it that people are getting involved. But the belief kind of is right now that the minute you have a legal person, bam, you're automatically bound by statutes, which is just absurd. It's absurd. And in fact, in the video, the guy even mentioned that in the legal system, all persons are equal. All persons are equal. If they're all equal, then we're all, again, every person is born free. And I'm not talking about man. Every person, every new trust, every new corporation, they're all born free. They're all created with no duties or obligations or contracts until you start to contract with it or through it. You start to enter into contracts that start to bind you to things you probably don't want to be part of. So statutes are one of those. Just having a legal person does not bind you to anything because you have a right to be recognized through a legal person in their system. In fact, you have to. It's the only way that they can even see you. It's the only way you can enforce your rights. So you're going to want one of those. And it's a good thing. It's a tool. So what are they actually doing then when they charge you criminally with something? A statutory offense? Again, I think what we covered in one of the previous episodes is what's going on is the government, technically speaking, they're all trustees. They hold the rank of trustee when it comes to your trust. You deposited something of value with the government. They are a franchise that was given the right to carry out the duties of Queen Elizabeth in this part of the world for the Commonwealth. So they're out there collecting all these birth registrations to enforce, to protect people's rights, and it's all subcontracted to Canada is kind of what it is. So it's all being subcontracted to Canada. They got exclusive right to control her territory in this part of the world. So it's like a sales territory for Coca-Cola if they were to subcontract it out to another corporation. So you get this legal person, a trust, and that's what it is, it's a trust. And we covered this, I believe, in a previous episode as well, where the birth certificate that you get back, which is the valuable consideration, used to even say on the back, for treasury use only, I mean, it says bank, in Canada here, it says printed by Canadian Banknote Company Limited, so you know it's not... It's not ID. It's a banknote. It even comes on bond paper. Has anybody noticed that the new paper money with the clear plastic on it is precisely the same as the new birth certificates with the clear piece of plastic through it? Securities. Canadian banknotes are securities, and the birth certificate is a security. It's evidence of a security, basically, that's being held by the government. So they're all trustees, and this just makes sense because they're holding something of value in trust. That makes them the trustee. I know it's an incredible leap in logic here, but they're trustees. And they're acting as officers of the crown for Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth, not to be confused with the crown. And she's just the principal trustee. So she's still your trustee. So even the highest office on their side of the equation, on the trustee side, the highest office is the principal trustee, which is Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth. She's your trustee. So if she's your trustee, then all these people that serve below her, they can't possibly have more authority than her, and all she has is the power of a trustee on this land for your legal person. So that got way too complicated. That's a bit of background here. So what they've done is no different than what they did when they first started running the Hudson's Bay Company here in Canada. Now, they only had a limited number of officers of the crown, like employees, workers for the Hudson's Bay Company. So they had to hire, obviously, the local population to do a lot of their work for them. And as soon as they hired the local population, whoever came to work for them obviously became employees of the crown. And that's where the crown's law started to apply to them when they were acting in the capacity of an employee for the crown. So this is all just a furtherance to this. We're 200 years down the road now, and what they've done is they've made every single one of us. They haven't made us, sorry. We went and signed up for it. We went and we were convinced that we needed a social insurance number in order to work in Canada. And they weren't kidding about that, but they were talking about actually being an employee of Canada, working in Canada, in the jurisdiction of that private corporation. So they tricked us into going and signing up voluntarily for a social insurance number, which identifies us as an officer or an agent of the Crown in right of Canada. Okay? So that's how they got us to basically, we didn't really become employees, because this is, again, where it starts to get complicated again. I can get hired at McDonald's, but then never work one shift. So even though I have I've been granted the privilege of being an employee at McDonald's, until I ever actually work, McDonald's policies never applies to me. So they got us all to sign up for these social insurance numbers that really only ever apply if you're actually holding office within the government. So you now have the privilege of being able to hold office within the government. You have a number. Congratulations. You filled out a form. You apparently passed the civil service exam, and now you're a federal employee. They just never schedule you for one shift. And this, even Ronald Reagan actually commented on this when he was president. Somebody asked him what the definition of a taxpayer was, and I believe his reply was a federal employee that never took the civil service examination. He knew. Most of these people know this. This is nothing new. Okay, so jurisdiction. Now, up till now, basically everything we've talked about is the government is making it look all nice and legal-like on paper that you're actually one of their employees or agents or officers of their corporation instead of who you really are. So it's all just evidence that helps them establish things, right? Nothing is a fact. So what happens is when a cop pulls you over and you were smart enough to have used your birth certificate to go get a driver's license, so now they can tie you directly back to that bond, but because you need to produce a birth certificate in order to get a driver's license. Now, the sovereign people of this land don't need driver's licenses. So if you went and got a driver's license, I guess that means that you want some form of a government privilege. And the only thing that government can pass laws against is their own people. So if the government's granting you a license to drive, it must be as one of their officers or agents, because their officers and agents have no human rights. They only have the rights that the corporation grants to them, right? Again, this is do officers of corporations have human rights? No. Because to extend human rights to an officer of a corporation would be to grant human rights to the corporation itself. So officers and agents of this private foreign corporation need permission to travel here. And they need to be bonded, because they might actually harm one of the people of this land while they're out and about, and the Crown wants to make sure that they're insured. This is all about insurance policies. So you're helping them establish, or basically you're helping them to create joinder to help to help them to establish in court that you are actually one of their agents. And that allows their courts to operate off of presumptions, right? So now that the court is operating off of all these presumptions when they bring you into a provincial court, and we can break this down. I'm just going to go through here a little quicker. They bring you into a statutory court for a charge, like a speeding infraction, a driving charge, something. And the cop always has the driver's license number written down on the charge. And if you look at the actual charging instrument, they may have started to stop doing this now, but not that I've seen yet. I don't think they ever can. You'll notice that, again, your first name is spelled in upper and lower case properly, and your last name is spelled up, all uppercase, always on the charging instrument, especially in summary conviction. In any criminal court, the name's going to be spelled like that because, again, they only have jurisdiction over their own officers. And when the first name is spelled upper lowercase and the last name is all capitals, that is capitis diminutio media. That is the medium loss of rights. That is a Roman civil officer. That is somebody holding office. Okay, so they've actually identified you as an officer. Now, you had a driver's license. They've wrote the name out in the name of an officer, right? And they've identified your trust, because if you look at the docket, they've got the name of the trust on the docket. So that's the vessel that they've brought into dock, right? They're now holding it in port to make one of the officers that works for that company appear. So the docket shows the all caps name completely. But then you look at the charging instrument that the clerk will have. And on the charging instrument here, the first name is upper lower, and the second, the last name is all caps. So now you've got a trust on the docket, the name of the trust that the infraction is filed against. You've got the name of an officer that's been charged, and then they get the man to appear to basically act in the capacity of that office in the courtroom. So, and you did it voluntarily. So, bam. Now the court operates off the presumption that the Crown is telling the truth and you really are one of their agents, which it looks like on paper because you've got a driver's license. The name is written properly. The Crown's brought a claim against it, and the Crown only has claims. They can only possibly bring complaints against their own people. So you've done everything you can to help that court operate off of presumptions, which you are now not going to rebut. You're going to start making stupid arguments. You're going to start arguing points of law that either don't apply to you or you're not even qualified to make legal determinations on. Again, how many times have people heard that, you're not a lawyer, you're not qualified to make legal determinations about that? Okay. Well, that just tells you right there that how could it possibly apply to you if you're not even qualified to make determinations about what it means? That means that if I actually went and read a law in one of their books and said, okay, well, I'm allowed to go do this. No, you're not qualified to make that determination. You've got to check with an attorney first, a licensed attorney licensed to practice in Canada, qualified to make legal determinations. Like, this whole thing is just a giant pile of shit. None of it applies to you in the first place. But that's how the jurisdiction is granted. So now they've got you voluntarily showing up to a provincial court where a cop has written out a charge against an officer. You produced a driver's license that you got by your own consent, and that driver's license is property of the province, right? The province can ask for it back any time. That tells you it's not yours in the first place. But they sure got you to show up for court and be surety for whatever the charge is. So, basically, there's no. You got to remember everything I just explained there. None of this is actually a fact. None of this is a fact. Not one thing I just mentioned of all that is actually a fact. They've just operated on presumptions. They presumed you were a McDonald's employee. They presumed you were on McDonald's business. They presumed you're an employee. They presumed all this stuff, and you're not rebutting it. And that's what it means that the court's operating on presumptions, because everything I just detailed has been a presumption up until now. And that's what the court is operating off of, and they will continue to operate off of it. And that's why I brought up earlier that until people start correcting things on the record, and once you bring a fact into that courtroom, you're going to be the first person to bring a fact in there, period. They never bring a fact. The only fact they have is that you were driving, let's say the charge was driving 65 in a 50 zone. If, as long as you agree with the cop, I mean, the court can establish whether or not it was a fact after going through the evidence and say, yeah, okay, it was a fact, you were going 65 in a 50. Well, great, that's what guilty of the facts mean. Okay, great, I was guilty of the facts. Yeah, you're right. Dean Clifford, you were sitting in that chair 5 minutes ago. Yes, I was sitting in that chair 5 minutes ago. Okay, that's now a fact. The problem is, who gives a shit? What's your point? Oh, well, that's a violation of criminal code, blah, blah, blah. Well, okay, you know, that's all nice and fine and dandy, but unfortunately, I'm not an officer, agent, or employee of Canada. Those laws don't apply to me. Again, it's all the presumptions, and there's very good ways of rebutting those presumptions that they can't get around. And once you properly rebut some of the presumptions, we have what you call a fatal flaw in their case. They have a fatal flaw, something they cannot overcome to prosecute you now. And again, this is why they really need you to have an attorney, by the way. And I'm proud to say that they're calling it the rise of the pro se litigant movement right now all over the world. I think even in Ireland, something was just published the other day about the numbers of people that are showing up as pro se litigants now and causing problems, making these kind of arguments, has absolutely swamped the courts. And I said 2 years ago, if we could just get everybody in there, not hiring lawyers and making, I don't even care if it's wrong arguments, we're just going to clog the machine here. We're going to bog this thing down so bad that it can't even operate. And that's really all we need anyways. So anyways, back to jurisdiction. So that's how they've been establishing jurisdiction. It's all been by your own admissions, everything you've applied for, and then establishing joinder, making things appear as they're something, even though they're not. But it appears on the face that you're an officer of the crown, right? So it's all just presumptions, because there's not one fact. And to back that up even further, it's actually well known that the attorneys, if you hire a lawyer, he's going to do everything in his power to make sure that you never file an affidavit into the court, because that'll be the only fact now in that court file. The only one. The Crown never files any facts. They never file any affidavits. They never have anything. And the testimony of a cop, not an affidavit. You ever notice it on their tickets? They've sworn them out to themselves. Okay? Half the time. Like, these informations are complete crap these cops are filing, number one. Plus, half the time, if you actually get one of these blubbering idiots on the stand and start questioning him as to who the injured party is, he'll say nobody. So, which, again, doesn't matter. There doesn't need to be an injured party if it's the Crown bringing a claim against one of their own officers. Now, what you don't want to do is you don't want to walk into court. This is more practical application. You don't want to... I see Durf on there. Yeah, we'll get to that. You don't want to walk into court and start challenging the jurisdiction of the court, okay? That's not the correct procedure when challenging jurisdiction. The court has the jurisdiction to hear the matter brought before it. That's not a question at all. You're just going to look stupid. There you go. It's the Crown's jurisdiction, the jurisdiction of the Crown to bring you into that court. All their jurisdiction is presumptions and sleight of hand and magic tricks to make it appear as though one thing is going on, when really a plain statement of facts by you is all it is to prove that something completely different is going on. Okay, so it's the Crown that's bringing you there. That's your adversary. But once you've exposed what the Crown has done, and once you've rebutted their presumptions and they cannot answer to anything that you're going to bring up, the judge has a duty and an obligation to dismiss everything against you. So if they actually allow it to continue, they're now harming you, and you can let them know that, and you now have a claim against them in civil court. And again, I talk about my friend in Ontario that did that months ago now, and that's exactly what he did. And as soon as he said that, he says, well, if you don't dismiss this, because they have no claim and they're not even attempting to make answer to anything that I just said, you have a duty to dismiss this right now. And she proceeded against him. It was a JP. And he said, well, you're harming me, and I'm going to come after you personally now. You're personally liable. And she laughed at him. And he filed a lawsuit against her the next day. And I think she's still on a leave of absence. That might have been as many as 6 or 7 months ago now. He still can't. He's had two private investigators looking for her. Can't find her. So when they try to make you believe that they have immunity and you can't come after them, no, that's horseshit. That is absolutely horseshit. So that's the main way they get jurisdiction. Again, when they pull you over and they're asking for a driver's license, it's because they want to start the whole sleight of hand trick against you. Well, he produced a driver's license and didn't say anything to the contrary, so I was led to believe that he must be an agent, officer, employee of the Crown, because he had a Crown issue, a government issue driver's license. If he's not an agent or officer of the Crown or somebody that requires permission to drive, then why would he have that? So that's what's being alluded to. That's what a presumption is. So now it's presumed you are an officer of the Crown because, well, you had a driver's license that only an officer of the Crown would require. Okay? So that stands until you can produce a fact that explains otherwise what's going on. And, I mean, affidavits that you basically have been beaten in the past and told if you didn't go get one of these that they'd kick your teeth in and drag you into, you know, and arrest you for driving without a license, that looks really bad when you start to put affidavits like that under the court file. And people have been doing that, and that's why for a while the clerks stopped allowing people to file affidavits into court, which is absolute nonsense. I can't think of a more grotesque violation of the judicial system than to deny people the right to put an affidavit into the court file. We raised some shit about that around here, and got some of the people at the courthouse, I think, in a bit of a hot seat, and that stopped pretty quick. So, but if they can make you believe it, then that is so. It's no different. It's no different than insurance company people. Okay, again, you guys got to remember when you get onto the courthouse and you want to file affidavits that rebut jurisdiction. And you got to serve the Crown with that, by the way, too, and give them 30 days to reply. And once they don't, you can default them even before the first hearing. And I spoke about that like 2 years ago in videos, or I think a year and a half ago. And a lot of people did it successfully, and I think a lot of people did it and didn't really follow through with the process, so it failed. But they just rebutted jurisdiction of the Crown. And what the heck was I going to say? But they were trying that stuff down here in Winnipeg, and it didn't last very long. Let me think here. I'm flying by the seat of my pants here. I don't normally have enough time to sit down and write a script for these episodes that we're doing. But that is for the most part how they're establishing jurisdiction. They're allowing you to get most of the identification that's going to sink you, and then they just have to sit and ride on their frivolous claims against you that really have no standing in fact. So when they find you guilty of the fact, that's not a big deal, right? Guilty of the fact, not a problem. The fact is I was driving without a license. The problem is I don't require a license. At the time of the complaint, I was not on duty as an officer of the Crown. In fact, I've never been on duty as an officer of the Crown, ever. Now, before even going down to the courts, if you want to rebut jurisdiction, a good way to do this also is just to send off your affidavit or your counterclaim against the Crown. Right. sorry, I'm kind of reading the thing here as I'm going. I'm chuckling. You got to contact the Crown here. You got like 2 months before your first court appearance usually, or you show up and you get full disclosure. And full disclosure is the thing of dreams. It's wonderful. You go in there, excuse me, Mr. Justice. I never call them Your Honor or anything like that, because when you're in provincial court, they are not judges. They are administrators. They're not your administrator. That's another angle you can take, but let's not go there right now. I haven't received full disclosure yet, right? And they go, oh, here, I got full disclosure right here. Yep, there we go. Now you've got it. And they'll want to set another hearing for like a month later. And you want to say right there, you want to say, now this is full disclosure. There's nothing else that you have to disclose to me, correct? And they'll say, yep, absolutely, that's full disclosure. Or they may say, well, there's more to come. Give yourself as much time as you want. Say, well, I got no problem coming back in 2 months. I need time to review the full disclosure here. And it's you leave and just get it on the record. They said that, yep, that is absolutely full disclosure. There's nothing else to come. Well, if you take it home and you go through the full disclosure, it's going to be every presumption that I just covered is going to be in that full disclosure. And the things that they're not going to talk about are things that you're going to reply to the Crown with now to rebut presumption, you know, where you say, well, I received your full disclosure in court that day. Unfortunately, there was no labor contract in here. There's not one fact that establishes that I'm one of your officers or employees or anybody that is required to obey any of your laws. Identity has not been established. There's about a million things you could pick apart in their full disclosure that is not in there. And if it's not in there, then it doesn't exist, because if they're concealing it, that's very bad. They can never come back now and say, here's the labor contract, or here's the proof that you're an officer of the Crown, because they already said they gave you full disclosure, right? That means that they're concealing pertinent documents. That would be a criminal charge against whatever Crown said that they gave you full disclosure. That's a couple of ways you can really mess with them and come back and go after them civilly or charge them yourself with a Form 2 criminal charge. Once you know what's going on, the glaring hole in any case they could possibly bring against you is so ludicrous. I can't even believe that this court system even operates off of half these things. In fact, they have to have those presumptions in place, or none of these courts would ever go anywhere. So that's the jurisdiction angle they're going for. It's not that you have a legal person, right? It's the contracts that you enter into with the legal person. And we covered last time the likelihood of you having a contract with the Crown, and that's almost nothing. Unless you're getting a paycheck for services rendered, there is nothing the Crown can give you that you didn't give to the Crown. You didn't provide for them in the first place. It's impossible for you to have a contract of servitude with the Crown or anything. They may be paying you for your services, right? But now, anybody that wants to argue this, now somebody sent me an email yesterday and today, and I asked them to remind me, even though they're not going to be able to watch the show tonight, they're going to download it later through Facebook. When police read you your charter rights, this is my favorite. Again, this is the sleight of hand. It's all about building presumptions against you. That's what they mean when they're building a case against you. They're building presumptions that they are hoping to hell that you cannot, or you don't know enough to rebut. And there you go, destroy the presumptions. And they're easy to do. They're so easy to do. There's a couple of really bad things you can do that you immediately cause a fatal defect in their entire claim against you. But the charter rights is a real fun one. Every time I get pulled over and they want to read me my charter rights because they're arresting me, you know, sir, blah blah blah, you've been chartered, you've been read your charter rights. Well, right away you got to pipe in there and you got to say, well, you know, unfortunately, my rights don't come from your charter. See, I'm not one of your chartered. I'm not an agent, officer, employee of the government of Canada. I'm not an agent of the Crown. I don't have charter rights. I have natural rights. I have human rights. I'm not one of your officers. My rights do not come from your charter. No rights come from a charter. A charter is something passed by the people to restrict the authority of the government. It's a restriction on authority. How could you possibly get rights from something that restricts the powers of the government? It's ridiculous. So if you understand your charter rights, that's how they're binding you to all that. Do you understand? Right? Some people have taken that to mean, do you stand under my authority? I'd say it's a very cryptic way of putting that. More so, if you understand your charter rights, then you understand the charter. If you understand the charter, then that must be something rather important to you, right? You must be under the charter. So that's a presumption that they operate off of. Oh, you read your charter rights, you understood it. Okay, yeah, so we're operating through the charter. And if you're operating through the charter now, well, I guess you're doing business with the government of Canada. Again, it's a corporate charter. What do they call it? A charter. It's a corporate charter. They are a chartered commercial vessel. chartered out of the UK. That's their charter from 1867, British North America Act. Canada was free to go sail the seas of commerce and contract with anybody that wants to contract with them. So it's just more ways of gaining jurisdiction over you through presumptions. Okay, and they use fear, and they don't really like it when you start entering affidavits into the court that you were physically intimidated and threatened and told if you didn't have this or you didn't produce a name that you would be beaten and thrown in jail. Those are very, very bad things once you start filing affidavits into the court that really causes a lot of problems for them. That really bailed my ass out a number of years back now when I was up on those 7 charges in Brandon, the ones where they ended up convicting me. I was guilty of the facts on all 7 of them. In fact, I tried to plead guilty to the facts for 7 days. Yeah, you're right. I did everything that he said I did. The problem is I don't give a shit. There's no law that says I can't do that. Well, they started getting really nervous at the end of the 3 days because I'd filed all sorts of affidavits into the court, affidavits about the sheriffs abusing me, affidavits about being hauled out of the courtroom and thrown in the basement for an hour and brought back up until I was more compliant to what the orders that the judge was trying to give me. Because every time they'd try to order me to do something, I'd say, well, is that an order? Well, yes, I'm ordering you to do that. Well, I'd like to put that order in writing then, please. I'd like to see that order in writing. Either that or I'd say, well, you have no authority to order me to do anything. Or they'd get really mad about that, and they'd arrest me. So they'd throw me in the – but they wouldn't say anything. It was never on the record. Anyways, that's neither here nor there. But it was the affidavits. It was making them – they were really nervous by the end of the 3 days. And they found me guilty of the facts. Good for you. Yep, you convicted me. I'm guilty of the facts. They wouldn't allow me to plead guilty of the facts for 3 days, though. Mr. Clifford, if you're going to enter a plea of guilty, it's with the understanding that you've done something wrong. I said, well, I haven't done anything wrong. I'm guilty of the facts. I did everything he said I did, and I'm also sitting in that chair right now. It's a fact. I'm sitting here right now. That's a fact. I'm guilty of that fact, too. You guys got a charge for that? Right? They knew they weren't scaring me anymore. And at the end of it, after convicting me guilty of the facts, they discharged everything. And then they asked me if I would be willing to pay a $50 fine, of which I said, not on your life. And then I left. I was actually angry. I said, are we done now? Can I leave? Are we finally done now? Good. I can leave? Okay, thanks. Bye. Right? And they were looking at 2 years in jail. But as soon as they saw that I wasn't afraid anymore, I didn't give a shit about this, and I understood the fact that, yeah, I'm guilty of the facts, but I don't care because those laws don't apply to me. It destroyed everything I had, and I don't even think I didn't do a good job of that at all because I was still floundering with this stuff. But I did do enough to destroy most of their case to the point where they could only find me guilty of the facts and then discharge everything immediately to make sure that they didn't harm me. And I think they gave me the minimum possible fine just in case I stuck the judge with it, because I think when he entered the plea for me, I'd said, oh, good, apparently you're the trustee because you entered the plea, so you handle all this. I think they were probably terrified I was going to stick them with any of the fines or the jail time, so that got me out of it as well. But that's the jurisdictional issue. You're not – giving your name does not grant them jurisdiction over you, because all they're doing is they're building a case of presumptions against you, especially in summary conviction. In order to indict you, you have to have done something serious where there's an injured party, like a rape or a murder or something. That's when they proceed indictable. And again, I think I mentioned on last week's show that peace officers do have the jurisdiction to arrest you. I don't care who you are. If you've actually harmed somebody, if you've actually caused a rape, if you've actually stolen, if there's an injured party, They can arrest you and detain you, okay? So don't think this is a get-out-of-jail-free card. This is why I say, freedom, it means assuming all liability for your actions. The more liability you assume in your own life for your actions, the more free you'll be, because then you're only answering to you or somebody that you've harmed. And then all you got to do is make sure you don't harm anybody intentionally, and you're free. Well, how fucking hard is that? But if you want to live through other people assuming liability for you, the more liability you let the government assume for you, the more jurisdiction you grant over them. And again, I talked about that last time, Tony. If I was going to give you my car, I'd probably want to put some conditions in place, wouldn't I? Especially if I was going to be stuck with whatever repair bills or damage you may cause it.
You did, yes.
There you go. So I'd want to put some restrictions on what you're able to do. Okay. So that's the biggest problem with jurisdiction that people need to understand is you can't go in and just challenge the jurisdiction of the court, right? If they're bringing you into a McDonald's office and they're having an administrative hearing for some McDonald's policies that you have allegedly broken, so you're out in the McDonald's restaurant, you're having a cheeseburger, right? So you're eating a burger. And one of the managers walks out and grabs you and arrests you and drags you into the back of McDonald's, and you just happen to also be an employee there, but you weren't working at the time. You were actually just a customer at the time. You're out there eating, and he drags you into the McDonald's office. Can you claim that office has no jurisdiction to hear the matter? No, it's McDonald's office. Of course they have the jurisdiction to hear it. Now, the manager provides your employee number. Yeah, this guy's a McDonald's employee. He was eating a burger, and that's against McDonald's policy to eat a burger while you're working. And it is. I worked there when I was 14. Like, obviously, when you're working in the kitchen, you can't just make yourself a Big Mac and eat it. So somebody could build a case that on its face appears as though you're an employee and you're eating while on duty. The problem is, as soon as you provide an affidavit that says, whoa, I wasn't working today. I was a customer. I came in and bought a burger and just sat down and I was eating it. Well, that's a fatal flaw in any claim against you now. Oh, okay. Yeah, well, you had an employee number, and, well, they made it look like you may have been on duty, so we operated on the presumption you must have been. Otherwise, why would he make that complaint against you? Okay? That's just how simple this is. That's all that's going on. There's no grand illusion. Well, it is a grand illusion, I guess, but it's not any more complicated than that. People are trying to make this more complicated than it needs to be. Destroying presumptions is actually, it's so much fun now. You can attack this shit all day long. You can do it verbally on the spot once you understand what's going on. So it's no different than that scenario I just gave you. Again, we have Canada doing business on this landmass. And one of the things that they had to grant us is the right to be an agent, officer, employee of Canada if we want to, because they're here. We have the right to work for them the same way we did when they came over here with the British, with the Hudson's Bay Company, and had to hire locals to do all their bidding because they didn't have enough traders, or they wanted to buy and sell and they wanted Indians to do some of their work for them. So they hired them and paid them, and then that bound them to Hudson's Bay Company policies while they were working, right? So it's just an extension of that. So the claims against you, again, are entirely presumptions. They're entirely probably factually correct. The problem is that at no point were you on duty. Were you an officer of the Crown? I mean, I see one thing up here. Excuse me, officer, but where have I broken the common law? Again, that's a different jurisdiction. We can get into that. What you could say is something when you're first pulled over, and this is more so, we're probably going to wind up doing a practical application episode next, I think, maybe putting some of this into practice. But a correct statement to an officer, a peace officer, be it, excuse me, Mr. Peace Officer, but do you believe I have or am about to commit an indictable offense? And if he says no, then you say, okay, thanks, I'm leaving. Well, if there's nothing else you'd like, I'm leaving. Right? They have no authority to detain you, unless they either have like a warrant for your arrest. I mean, a real warrant. Or if it's just a random traffic stop, they can only detain you if they believe you have or are about to commit an indictable offense. You almost nothing they ever bring into the courts is an indictable offense. Like I say, you'd have to be a rapist, or like I talked about last week with jurisdiction with peace officers. If they have their officers on the lookout for a suspect matching your description who's committed a crime, they can detain you and ask you for ID. They can, and I believe in that. Right? I mean, we do have a society here that is trying to function. But all you have to do is get a copy of the police officer's arrest manual. And I've got a copy here I used to carry with me, and I read it out to them one time, and they pulled me over. And they're like, oh, well, that's not, you know, we don't really have to obey that. That's like more of a guidebook. And I said, it's got the fucking case law right here that backs it. What are you talking about? You don't have to actually obey this. And it's the right to refuse giving your identity, the refusal to give name. You have every right to refuse to give your name. They can't just stop you and say driver's license and registration or ID or whatever they want to ask you, whether you're on the street or in your car. Now, again, the license plate is a presumption of jurisdiction. Oh, well, you've got one of our plates. So they have the right to detain you right up until you rebut the presumption that that license plate establishes. And the presumption is you're performing some kind of a duty or a function of the government, a public service, something. But as soon as you say, Mr. Peace Officer, but I'm not an officer, agent, or employee of the government. I'm not performing any function of government right now. I'm not a public servant. I'm performing no public service. This is actually in private use right now, and I'm the equitable owner. Now, having said that, if I'm not under arrest because you either believe I have or I'm about to commit an indictable offense, I'd like to go now, please. My will is to leave here right now. That's my free will. You just really handed them an ass-fucking for any presumptions they possibly could be making. And again, if it's an RCMP, they're going to be recording this. Now, I have an hour and a half of this that I'm going to be using at my private prosecution on Wednesday to get warrants issued for these cops, where I said all this. And they walked right through everything and ignored everything, answered nothing. I even produced affidavits, paperwork, documents, you name it. And these people are like they're quite uneducated. It's pretty brutal. I mean, I had an RCMP officer, a peace officer, when I told him how many laws he was breaking, how many higher laws he was breaking to attempt to enforce the British Columbia Motor Vehicle Act against me, in fact, which he actually violated about five times, and I sent him a letter of how many times he broke the same act afterwards. But anyways, so I said, well, aside from breaking this law, you're breaking this statute, which you have to obey. You're breaking this statute, which you have to obey. You're breaking these six things out of the Criminal Code of Canada, which you definitely have to obey. You're violating the Bill of Rights, and you're violating most of your own charter right now, just so you're aware. And I named which ones he was violating. And his response to that was, well, unfortunately, sir, the Bill of Rights is a piece of American legislation. These people are so uneducated and ignorant. This guy, an RCMP officer, did not even know that Canada has a Bill of Rights. And this is on my audio, and I'm spluttering now. I'm flabbergasted. I said, excuse me. I said, oh, my God, you're not kidding. I said, you actually don't even know that there's a Bill of Rights in Canada. These are your laws. I'm a house builder. You're a peace officer. Why do I know your shit by heart and you don't? Why do I know there's a Bill of Rights? You've actually never heard of the 1960 John Diefenbaker Bill of Rights, Canadian Bill of Rights. You're actually not kidding. This is terrifying. This is actually terrifying. You didn't even know there was one. You're not kidding. I don't even know what to say about that. And I'm going off on this guy about this. They don't know, right? But it doesn't matter, and I just kept laughing. I said, you know, this is hilarious. If you guys are going to record this stuff, by the way, and it's wonderful, make sure that when the cop's blabbering and blithering like a moron, that you're recording it all. And when they're done speaking, say, do you have anything else to say? The same thing they say to you. Do you have anything else you want to say? Do you have anything else you want to add to that? Because you're getting them to testify against themselves. And they'll do it all day long, the same way that we used to do it. I'd love to go off on rants. I mean, I gave my brother shit. I watched his three-hour interrogation where he was schooling them on law. And fortunately, he did it right. But I was like, man, every time you open your mouth, you're testifying against yourself. He's like, I don't give a shit. I'm right. And they knew I was right. And they kept doing that. Oh, do you have anything else you want to say? Yeah. And he kept talking. And he was educating them. It was friggin' funny, but that didn't go anywhere anyways because we made that all go away. But it's all – they're attempting to get jurisdiction over you. And by all rights, we should be attempting to get jurisdiction back over them. And that's by recording everything and doing the same thing. Just saying, I mean, I was on the phone with my brother the one time he got pulled over, and the first thing he did when the cop came to the window and the cop asked for his driver's license, he says, "Excuse me." He goes, "Do I look like an officer or an agent of the Crown?" Because I'm instructing him on the phone. And he's recording the conversation. The cop goes, well, no. Oh, okay. Are you an officer or an agent of the Crown?" And the cop motions with his hands to his uniform like, "Hello, are you an idiot?" And Darren goes, "I will take that as a yes, you are an officer or an agent of the Crown." He says, "Well, I'm not." "And you just confirmed that. We now have a fact. What do you want?" Well, he just got the cop to admit in the first sentence of their interaction, the cop agreed with him that he's not an agent or an officer of the Crown. How in the fuck do you overcome that flaw in any claim they could possibly bring against you now? You can't. They'll keep coming, though, hoping that you won't know how to defend yourself, like file an affidavit and a certified copy of transcripts from that into the court record, or send that to the Crown and tell them to withdraw and send you a check for $5,000 for damages, otherwise you're going to sue them civilly, right? Go after the cops, sue them as well, go after their bond, charge them criminally. There's any number of things you can do, but this is all about rebutting presumptions. As much as they're trying to build a case against you, you're trying to rebut jurisdiction from the instant that they contact you. And what a better thing to say the minute they walk up to the window and you roll it down and they ask for your driver's license registration than to say, "Excuse me, have you mistaken me for an agent or officer of the Crown?" Right? That's really bad for them. Oh, and by the way, I'm recording this. I'm recording this conversation. You're injuring me. You're damaging me. Now, a lot of people would say license plate grants jurisdiction immediately, and that's nonsense. 2 years ago now, when people were trying to tell me that registration basically gave all property to the government, and I said that's bullshit. I didn't even need to read a law book to know that that's bullshit. I went and I did the research, and I found out, and I went and I found the actual definitions in the case law that clearly state that registration conveys absolutely no interest in property. It conveys no interest in property. So registering the creation of your legal person transfers no interest in that property. The equitable owner is still the equitable owner. Okay, that's what the interest is the equity. When you register a car, okay, you're transferring no interest in the property, no equity. It's still all your equity. And that's the problem is all these presumptions allow them to get around who we really are, and that's the biggest problem. So once we establish and make it a matter of public record now who we really are, they can never operate on those presumptions again because that's now a frivolous claim by the Crown, being brought by the Crown. They know fuck well who you are. It's no longer just something that, oh, well, you know, you signed up for a driver's license, you did this. We were left to believe that you must be this. We can only presume that you are this. Okay? They can't do that when you make it a matter of fact who you are. Because they have no facts. They got nothing. Everything you do, you've done to yourself. That's the consent part of by you're governed by your consent. You're also governed by your own ignorance because you've provided them with all these presumptions they can operate to drag you into a court that operates on presumptions where they rip you a new asshole. Okay? Yeah, and again, their ignorance is no excuse. You know or you ought to have known that is what is going on. So we don't even need to get into power of attorney for the legal person and other things today. That's something else we're going to talk about is the jurisdiction over the legal person maybe another day. This is jurisdiction over simple matters, simple arguments people can start making now. Again, just because I have a driver's license does not mean I'm operating under it at the time of the complaint. I've tried to hammer this through people's heads for 2 years now. It's on my earliest videos. I have a license to fish. Am I fishing under that license at the time of the complaint? A, if I'm sitting beside my wood stove, no, probably not. Okay? That's an example I gave at a seminar in Toronto. I don't think people understood what I was really trying to get at when I said, this is how easy it is to build a case based on presumptions against you. All they have to do is have a SWAT team come to my house, kick the door down while I'm sitting at my wood stove reading a book, put a gun to my head, and demand my fishing license from me. Okay? They will then build a case against me. If I, let's say I was drinking a beer or having a glass of wine and reading a book. Beside my wood stove, the SWAT comes and kicks my door down, put a gun to my head, ask me how many drinks I've had, and I say, well, I'm having a glass of wine right now. Okay. Fishing license. Do you have your fishing license? You know, oh, yeah, I got one of those. Okay, hang on. Here you go. Here's my fishing license. Aha! So they write all the information down now from the fishing license. They acknowledge they have a criminal complaint against me now because you actually cannot have open liquor in the boat while you're fishing in Manitoba or even in your ice shack now, right? So they could actually feasibly build a case against me based on presumptions that I was drinking open liquor while fishing because I produced a fishing license. How easy should it be to rebut that entire ludicrous scenario? Pretty easy. But that's every scenario. They just really make it appear, they leave out the pertinent information, like the fact that I was sitting beside my fucking wood stove, that I was in my house, that I couldn't possibly be fishing at the time. But, well, that's all left open to presumption. It's not our duty to tell you the law or how to defend yourself. If you don't know enough to show up with an affidavit and say, well, there's a problem here. I was sitting in front of my wood stove, okay? This is no different than even if I was out in a boat fishing. Because even if I was fishing at the time of the complaint, I wasn't fishing under that license. Because under the capacity I was fishing in, I don't require a license, even though I possess one. I have the right to fish as an agent, officer, or employee of the Government of Canada, a foreigner who has no right to these resources. So they're limited to what they can take, a limit on your fish. The sovereign people of this land don't need that. The foreigners do, because they have no rights here. Officers have no rights. We've covered that, okay? So I don't need a license when I'm actually fishing any more than I do when I'm sitting beside my wood stove, because at neither time was I operating through or under that license. Driving, same thing. It's all the same thing. It's an illusion of jurisdiction. They build a case against you based on presumptions and bullshit. And you don't know how to properly rebut the presumptions and the bullshit they're operating through. So this goes with everything. Now, yep.
We're just coming up here to the top of the hour. There's only 1 minute left.
Yep.
Again, I want to ask you, do you want to take a break for one song so you can grab a glass of water and then we're going to Q&A for the second half? Because we do have a lot of questions.
Yeah, might as well, because we've got a lot of questions. We can go through them all and expand on some of the stuff if we need to. So,
okay, unless you want to keep talking, you have more important stuff to say. How do you feel about doing a one-song break?
Yeah, I'll do a one-song break. We'll come back.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, then we're going to take a one-song break. If you want to make this a bathroom break or a water break, go ahead. So we're going to play a quick song by... who did I pick this week? Let's see. It's by Styx, Renegade. So we'll be back with you here in about 4 minutes.
Oh, mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law. Lawman is putting an end to my running and I'm so far from my home. Oh, mama, I can hear you a-crying, you're so scared and all alone. Hangman is coming down from the gallows and I don't have very long.
You're listening to Global Fact Radio.
Okay, and we're back. Ladies and gentlemen, with episode 3 with Dean Clifford, and now we're going to tackle on Q&A. Dean, unless you have something you want to add before we start?
No, I'm loving some of the comments here. People are already thinking ahead. I love it. Somebody here asking about a license to open up a bar or anything like that. I think that nothing could do this world better than people opening up businesses with no licenses of any kind and telling their local city or their local political affiliation to get fucked and start limiting the amount of power from these people and start fighting back that way. I think that would be a thing of beauty. That would be fantastic. Health concerns can be alleviated. Hey, no problem. I'll let your health inspectors in, but I'm not getting a license. You don't need a license. I don't require a license for you to have an inspector come in and make sure that I'm being healthy here. So that's another jurisdictional issue we could probably talk about sometime. It's the same thing again. This is all people have to realize that the couple scenarios that I just spoke about, this all works hand in hand with the shit that we talked about last time there with your property and the jurisdiction over your property, where they presume your joint tenant in common until you provide an affidavit that says, well, no, I own this fee simple absolute, which means free condition, and everything that you're claiming I have to do is a condition of ownership, so F you. That's rebutting presumption of jurisdiction. Same thing with the driver's license. It's all the same thing. Put it in context. Nothing is complicated. We'll get to the questions right away. Just every time something like this happens, put it into the context of you eating a burger at McDonald's, and they come out and they drag you out of the restaurant area and drag you into the manager's office and accuse you of violating some McDonald's policy. And all you have to do is make it clearly demonstrable that you are not an employee of McDonald's, especially at the time of the complaint, even if you really are an employee, just not at the time of the complaint. So that could be something as simple as, well, yeah, I mean, yeah, I work here, but I'm not working today. Where's the payroll records? Where's the schedule that shows I'm working today? Why am I not wearing a fucking uniform if I'm on duty? All agents and officers of the Crown have to be wearing a uniform, right? These are all simple rebuttals. Anybody, I don't care how dumb you are, could prove they're not working at McDonald's if they weren't actually working at McDonald's. You don't have to be a rocket genius to do that. And that's all that's going on here. You just have to be able to put it into that context in your mind and think about it. How would I rebut their claim? Their presumption that I'm on duty at McDonald's right now. Well, I got no uniform. There's no payroll records. I'm not being paid by the hour right now. What function am I performing at McDonald's? Are you claiming I'm a deep fat fryer guy right now, or am I on the service window? What function, what duty are you claiming I'm performing right now at McDonald's? Sitting on a bench in the restaurant area, eating a Big Mac while in my street clothes is not a duty or function of McDonald's when you're on duty. Okay, that's not a job description. It's very simple. That's everything can be attacked this way. Everything. There's not one thing they could ever charge you with unless, again, you've raped or murdered somebody or stolen or break and enter or something. Nothing that can't be rebutted in this precise same fashion. Okay, I think I pretty much beat a dead horse there, but unfortunately, most people are dead horses. They're the dead walking. I'm sorry, everybody, but you have to be beaten mercilessly before you're finally going to get some of this stuff through your head and realize how simple it is. Okay.
All right. Well, some of these questions you might have already covered here because it's a little bit of a task here to kind of moderate the chat and run the switchboard and all that stuff. Okay, so the first question, we're going to do the chat room questions first, and then we'll go to the questions that were sent in by email or the ones that were put on the fan page. So Derek Moran asks, I'm supposed to remind Dean to talk about his Ben Lowry interview where he broke down.
Thank God you brought that up. Okay. Was there anything more or just that?
Just that.
Okay. This has to do with the Crown. Now, I was shocked, and I don't know how sincere Ben was when I talked about this. He may have been pulling my chain. I don't know. Taking a piss, I think, is what they call it in the UK. For some reason, the minute everybody hears The Crown, they automatically think of this old lady sitting on a chair with a crown on her head, and they automatically think that it's Queen Elizabeth. Okay, the legal system is very precise. Usually, if Queen Elizabeth has a claim against you, it'll say Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth. It will not say Her Majesty the Queen. Okay, which one? Dairy Queen? Okay. Everybody wants to jump to the conclusion that this is Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth doing all this, instead of crown corporations, like the Corporation of London. Okay? Most of this and all the crown attorneys, this all stems from the 1 mile of downtown London, the Crown Corporation of London. Okay? Think about that. The Crown Corporation of London. The Crown. What do they call the people in court coming after you? The Crown. Why do people assume that's Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth? It is not. In fact, Queen Elizabeth is not even allowed into the sovereign city of London, the Crown Corporation of London, with the two dragons and the little red cross there, the shield, when you enter through the big stone gates there to where the banking center is. She is not allowed to enter that jurisdiction, that area, without permission from the mayor of London, the mayor of the sovereign city of London, because she's a sovereign, and the sovereign city of London is a sovereign city of London. It's another sovereign. Okay? Queen Elizabeth cannot go into the sovereign city of London without getting permission first from the sovereign authority of that area. Now, Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth is a person. The sovereign city of London is a person. They're all just persons in law. Some have more money than others. Those are all jurisdictions. Again, that's all sovereignty really means. It's just its own sovereign jurisdiction. Okay? The crown in right of Canada is usually the federal crown that's coming after you. Okay? That's the crown in right of Canada. The crown in right of Canada. That is not Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth. In fact, if you call the military and try to make complaints to the provost marshal, which I tell people not to do unless you've actually been abused, they'll tell you they can't get involved in internal Canadian matters. Her Majesty, Queen Elizabeth, cannot get involved in internal Canadian matters. So why do people think, when the crown's coming after them in the courts, that it's Her Majesty, Queen Elizabeth? It's not. Okay? That's the federal crown. Then there's the provincial crown. Every province has a crown. Crown and Right of Manitoba, the Crown and Right of Saskatchewan, the Crown and Right of Alberta, the Crown and Right of BC. And absolutely none of these are representative of any landmass. They're political corporate jurisdictions. They are non-geographically based, which is why Canada can tax you anywhere in the world that you make money. Physically speaking, you'd be anywhere in the world. And if you're making money as a taxpayer of Canada, which is a non-geographically based nation, they can tax you. Okay? This is all jurisdictional issues. But people have to quit, and that's what I brought up with Ben Lowry. I said, well, you guys did know that that was like the Corporation of London, the crown, right? You guys keep thinking that means like Queen Elizabeth. And he seemed flabbergasted by this, and I was flabbergasted. People were flabbergasted by this. They live there. You actually can't drive around London without seeing the Corporation of London, the Crown Corporation of London. So I guess maybe it's just you're so used to seeing it, I don't know. But anyways, so that's the other thing people have to stop doing, is when they're going to be sending notices off or they're going to be rebutting jurisdiction or whatever they're doing, don't be sending your stuff off to Queen Elizabeth any more than you should be sending your notices off to the Pope. Okay? It's got nothing to do with what's going on here. Nothing to do with what's going on here, jurisdictionally speaking. The Crown and Right of Canada is, as far as I'm concerned, a franchise of the Corporation of London. That's all the Crown, their franchises. That's why it says the Crown in right of Canada. Canada has this sales territory. This is their sales territory. Now, if it was Tim Hortons or some other corporation where they've all got districts or zones where only one person can own a Tim Hortons in this district that's representative on a map, okay? If that guy wanted to call himself Tim Hortons in right of and give that territory a name, like Canada, then that's the jurisdiction and territory that he's referencing when he says Tim Hortons in right of Canada. Okay? Oh, don't even get me started on David Williams and the right of self-determination. Sorry, I just saw that come up on the board. Of course you have the right of self-determination. And we fuck it up every time by contracting. So let's go on to another question.
Before we do, I just want to remind Mother Nature, you need to be have Mother Nature need to complete your questions, because I can see you're asking them based on what Dean is talking about, and it won't work there because your question will go in the queue, which will be further down. By the time we get to it, Dean won't have a clue what you're talking about. Please make complete questions. All right. Next question. Landshark says, Landshark 1969, if the charter does not apply to private citizens and it is an act, how can any act apply to private citizens or private conduct of a citizen? My question is, do statutes or acts or bylaws apply to private citizens?
Actions, stats, bylaws, anything passed by the government has no application to interactions between private citizens. None whatsoever. That's covered in the two Supreme Court sites that I usually give to people on a regular basis, R versus Dell and R versus Big M Drug Mart. And actually, while we're on break there as well, actually I can read both of those if we need to on the radio here in a sec. I keep both of them on my desktop here once in a while. The Police Manual of Arrest, Seizure, and Interrogation, 9th edition. I got mine like 2 years ago or a year ago. I can't remember how long ago I got this. Page 110, Arrest, Seizure, Interrogation, number 22, Refusal of Citizen to Identify Self. This is kind of answering a question from before. And you got to remember, this is right in their arrest book. This is supposed to be what they go by. The common law does not require a citizen to identify oneself or carry identification of any sort. Therefore, while it may be the mark of a good citizen to identify oneself when asked to do so, a police officer must not use force to compel someone to identify oneself if he or she refuses. Otherwise, the officer will be guilty of a criminal assault and liable to civil damages. The case law supporting that is Coughlin versus Waugh, 1957, 118 of the Criminal Code of Canada. Okay? And it goes on. Just get this and read it. It's actually amazing what they should know. This is their friggin' manual. If I don't know, if I'm a cop and I don't know this, then I'm as incompetent as a house builder who doesn't know how to frame or build a house properly, but I'm out there building houses. Okay? So, and again, no act or statute, nothing the government can possibly pass as a law, code, policy, I don't care what it is, has no application to interactions between private citizens or just the private citizen, period. Okay, it's impossible. That would violate its charter altogether. No more than Coca-Cola can pass a policy that applies to non-Coca-Cola. This is just logic. And it even says so right in their own statutes. Again, Heritage Canada webpage there about Section 32 of the charter was to make it clear that the charter only applies to the government. So if their charter applies only to them, how can anything that they possibly pass suddenly leap out of that firewall and suddenly become applicable to you unless they bring you to within what they define government? And even then, it's in those the other two pieces of case law that I provided, again, the R versus Dell and R versus Big M Drug Mart. It's not enough to bring you within the definition of government to be contracting for the government, like providing a service for them, like, say, driving a gravel truck that you're delivering to where they're working on a road somewhere. You have to be acting as an officer of the government under a policy or program of the government, which means you actually are on their payroll and one of their officers, okay? So it's not. Right. It says that right in the case law. All you have to do is read it. Okay.
Okay, next question from Mother Nature. Is a social insurance number not your exemption number?
Oh, boy. Okay, my understanding of this is, and I'll say my understanding, is your social insurance number, the only way it's a redemption number is as a trustee, as an officer, agent, or employee of the government. And the reason being is it's no different than, say, you work for a company and you get, yes, the Governor General does work for the Queen. Anyways, I won't answer that again out of turn. The if you work for a corporation and that corporation has a contract with a hotel somewhere for when they send workers out of town on the road, and you show up there and you get all your expenses back while you're on the job as a government agent or when you're working for that company, right? And if you show up at the hotel and you say, oh, no, I've got my number here. I've got my identification number that the hotel room is paid for. That's how the social insurance number will get rid of government debt, because agents or officers or employees of a corporation never pay for company debts out of their own personal pocket. So that employer ID number will waive the expense, or if you do pay something out of pocket of your own money and the company is going to pay you back, it would be through that number. That's the only explanation for what that social insurance number does for you. That's my personal belief on that, because I know for a fact right now that it'll only extinguish government debt. That's all it will extinguish. Again, nobody is ever saying that when you get a bill from the government for one of their bullshit fees or something, that you have to pay that out of your own personal money. It's a government expense. Why are you paying that out of your own pocket? When I walk into a bank and someone gives me their account number, and they say, I'd like to take out some money, please, out of that account. Does the teller give me their own money? Do they reach into their back pocket and pull out their own personal wallet? No. This is why redemption is something completely different, a different stance. If you want to make a different argument, and that would be, I don't even want to do a show on that because I don't believe in doing this. That's where you write off the debt. Because it's a company expense. You never pay that out of your own pocket. Why would you? It's no different than you giving a bank customer money out of your own back pocket when they come to take money out of their account. You don't pay for that stuff personally. And if you do, they got to reimburse you. And that's why you want to keep receipts. Okay?
Okay. Durf, next question from Durf. Can you please explain the two jurisdictions on the face of the government-issued ID?
My belief on that, yeah, thanks, Dirk. I've noticed actually even some of the new ID coming out, the new driver's licenses, they actually have the name of the officer on there, I think under the photo, and then they've got the name of the trust on the other half of the driver's license. And if that doesn't confirm exactly what I've just been talking about, then I don't know whatever will. You're acting as an officer of the government under that trust, for that trust, basically, like your own franchise, if you want to call it that, except I don't want to explain it that way. I talked on one of the earlier episodes about how in the courtroom they're actually tricking you into acting as an officer of your own trust. But that as an officer, it's as a crown officer that must abide by their policy. So that's the reason the two different names. It's two different jurisdictions, but it's not. It's identifying you as an officer, and that's identifying the trust, the name of the trust you're operating through. And that's the all caps name. That's the two different jurisdictions that are on there as far as I'm concerned. And again, that's just proving that when you go to court and you see on the docket the all caps name, they've established that's the name of the trust being heard. Okay, that's the trust name. So when they call that name, they're not calling a man. That's now the name. That's now the trust matter being heard. Okay? So now everybody in that courtroom is an agent in some way or a representative of somebody to do with that name. That's now the matter being heard, that trust. Then they're operating up the presumption that you're an officer of the government operating through that trust. And that's where the upper lowercase first name all uppercase last name comes from. That is a civil officer of the government. So that's what I am going to claim is what the two jurisdictions are.
All right. Next question. The Crown have to have all elements of a cause of action?
Do they have to?
That's what the question is. The Crown, do they have to have all elements of a cause of action?
Well, no, not if you don't rebut, because everything is presumed. Everything is presumed until you start to rebut. That's why one of the guys I was helping in Ontario, and it never got further than him sending one letter to the Crown for further particulars for a criminal matter, and it was on a gun charge, unregistered firearm for like a rifle, I think, in his cabin. And the first question was, what is the cause of action? Just what is it? What is the cause of action? Because the cause of action, it's presumed that there's a cause of action in summary conviction. They skip all that and go straight to the hearing for how much you're going to owe in damages. And so the first question was, what is the cause of action? And then we had about, oh, geez, I don't know, about 21 more after that that would have been completely fatal to any claim that they were trying to make. The letter he got back that they did not file through the court, the letter he got back, he served them in court. They sent him a letter reply. And all it said was, we only have to answer number one. But then they didn't. That was it. Crickets chirping. He waited 6 months for them to answer that. They were hoping he was going to just, maybe forget that they didn't actually answer it and allow the court to proceed? So anyways, they ended up coming back to him and, what the hell? They ended up coming back to him, making him an offer, saying they would withdraw their claim if he agreed to a 1 year probation on owning a gun or something stupid. They just needed a contract with him, right? So it was ridiculous. But that's just how bad it is. Of course, they have to show the cause of action only once you demand it or rebut that there even is a cause of action. But then they won't be able to tell you what it is. What possible cause of action could there be if you're not one of their agents or officers? So, no, they don't have to prove anything if you allow the court to operate on presumptions. It's all presumed to be true. Everything is presumed. That's why they operate on presumptions. They have to, because there would be no possible way for them to actually have that court hearing if they didn't. There's no possible way they could do anything they're doing right now if they didn't operate entirely on bullshit and presumptions. Oh, there's a million fatal questions. Those are the ones I thought up of. I'm answering this guy about the sampling, the 21 fatal questions. No, think about this. People, all you have to do is think about what questions would you ask a McDonald's manager if you wanted to show that they couldn't prove that you were a McDonald's employee at the time of the complaint. That's all you have to do is think about this shit. I'm not giving out easy answers. I want people to start thinking, okay? The only thing more important to whether or not you win in court is that you start thinking and just going there and doing and asking questions. Negative averments. I've not been provided with or seen any evidence that demonstrates that I was an officer, an agent of the Crown at the time of the complaint, and I believe no such evidence exists. That's one question, one phrase in a negative averment. Okay, anyways, so no, they do not have to prove every element of the case because they're going to try to say, that is what we do at trial. No, it's not what they do at trial. It's everything is now, if you consent to a trial, you have automatically waived all deficiencies and defects in the Crown's case. If you enter a plea, if you enter an unqualified plea, you've waived every defect in the Crown's case against you. That's actually in the law books. There's actually case law about that. So no, absolutely not. That's why they want a plea right away. You've waived every defect, every possible fatal flaw you could bring up, because that's not what trial is for. Absolutely not. And don't believe their bullshit. They lie to you. I've had judges tell me, oh, Mr. Clifford, that's something you can reserve for trial. We'll address that at trial. And then when you go to trial, oh, well, Mr. Clifford, that should have been brought up at the preliminary blah, 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 blah hearing. Well, that's the one I did bring it up at. So they're fucking liars. So don't believe anything they say. They're all lying bastards. And and that's why I don't call any of them Your Honor. Not one of them is friggin' honorable in that courtroom. They lie, they connive, and they trick you. And don't fall for any of it. Okay. Don't let them enter. No, you don't have my consent to enter that form. Well, that's another matter. You know what? That's another matter altogether. Let's talk about that in another little educational thing. Okay. Next. I think Tony buggered off while I was ranting. Anyways, I'll continue to rant then until he comes back. Okay. I'll just read some stuff here. why don't they just throw you in prison?
Dean, I'm back.
Hello.
Dean.
Okay.
Yeah. Somehow my mic went on mute by itself. It does that once in a while. Okay.
Okay.
Next question
no sniper blew your head off. That's good. Glad to see you back.
No. The next question is going to take a live caller. They've been waiting now. I told them after the next question, we'll go to them.
Awesome.
So it's Tom, and he has a question for you. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, thank you very much. Hi, Dean.
Hey, how you doing?
Great, thanks. I've been following you for quite a while and highly admire you. I've got a question. I'm a married man through the public systems, and I was listening to your show. I believe it was one of the first ones through the gentleman hosting. And I was wondering if you could touch on exactly what is going on that, or is it even important? Is it possible for me just to remove presumptions that we're acting in the capacity of public servants through? I don't even really understand what's going on with that one, but just remove the presumption that we don't want to be considered public servants through that license.
The marriage contract is a little bit different. You'll notice they never come at you with a criminal charge through a marriage contract. Anything you could possibly do with a marriage contract, like a divorce, is entirely civil, and it's in family court. And here's the bad thing about the marriage contract everybody's got to understand right now. Marriage contracts, which are heard in the family court, that jurisdiction is one of only two left on this planet in any of our nations where they still are governed by ecclesiastical law. Okay, it's a very, very binding contract because it's done in front of God and the government
right.
at the same time. It's a very, very, very tough contract to get out of. It's probably one of the most binding in maritime law, in everything. It's a very nasty one. And there's very few remedies for that. And I would claim that one of the remedies is that there was no full disclosure at the time of the signing of the contract. Which
right,
means
that's
you, yeah, you invited the government in basically to be a mediator to any dispute that the joining of your two trusts might have. And it's actually it's a legitimate position that the government takes with that. Again, I'm a reasonable man. And if the government, if their duty here, and this is their duty and obligation, is to be trustees of our trusts, is to protect the equity in the trust. When two trusts are joined together, and then they have to be split afterwards, that does sound like the only legitimate job for a trustee, does it not?
Absolutely.
So the argument you want to take is you want to make sure you're coming at any dispute with a marriage contract from an equitable position. You have no other claim except equity when it comes to divorce. If you start arguing statutes, you're fucked.
Right.
You want to claim equity, right? It's no different than if I entered into a partnership with somebody where I brought in 99% of the value and the equity backing the merger, and my partner brought in 1%. Okay? When we then split, we decide after a couple of months of making money that we're going to split now, and we're both going to go our own way. Do we split 50-50?
No.
Of course not. It's all based on equity. Well, I brought this much in. This is how much we made after we paid ourselves. This is the profit. This is how much we've benefited from this mutual relationship here. Now we're going to split this along equitable lines, and that's how you can trap the courts. You don't consent to statutes. You consent to an equitable split of assets based on who brought what in, who made what. That's how you want to attack that. And once you've claimed the person as your property and you have the standing to speak for it, that's when you're going to be able to take control of the situation. What was I going to say as well? The kids are another matter altogether. That's another thing that they can be attacked once you have the proper standing and you removed authority from the government to administrate for your legal person or for the children's estates. And that's a whole other episode we could do where you can really put a serious fucking into their ability to try to enforce all their child family services bullshit on your kids.
Right.
Yay.
And that all... Hello.
Yay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... And you definitely want to do that one. That was an easy one. I helped somebody with fax in Ontario. It took two letters, and they ended up getting an apology from fax that they would never contact them ever again. So that's not a hard one at all. again, you need to understand what's going on, though. You need to rebut the presumptions, and that has to do with stripping power of attorney and administrative authority. We talked about that briefly the other night about how we're being governed by someone else because we are not governing our affairs. We are not administering our own affairs. So by the same operation of law and presumptions, they've taken control of our persons to administrate them for us because we seem to be missing. So once we've taken all that back, that's now missing. And you got to remember that that's the two roles that judges can play in. Remember the word supernumerary. That's what a judge is on the bench. They're a paid actor, and they're going to assume whatever role gives them the most power at any given time. And they're not going to tell you about that. That's what they're doing when they're changing venues. They're playing different roles, and they're not telling you what they're doing, okay? They're a paid actor who assumes whatever role is going to help them at the time, the most powerful positions. The first thing we need to do is strip them of every possible position they could have other than an actual judge. And then once they're acting as an actual judge, they have to be impartial and non-biased, and they have to make rulings based on the facts. Unless you're allowing them to administrate with power of attorney, then they're going to fuck you a new asshole with statutes.
Okay, that is my large concern, is protecting my children.
Yes, that should be everybody's concern. Now, how's this for a statement? And people have used this quite effectively if you know how to stand on it, and if facts or child family services don't get back to you. By the same argument I gave before for people, that when a cop pulls them over and they can say, well, it's not even possible for me to be acting in the capacity of an officer of the Crown right now, because right now I'm a trustee of God. I'm doing God's work right now, so I can't possibly be doing the Crown's. If your children were a gift from God, who are they to place conditions on ownership or possession of a gift from God? You're the guardian. God gave them to you. If it was the will and intent of God to put the government in that position, your children would have manifested themselves inside one of their fucking office buildings. Okay, but they didn't. Therefore, it was probably the will and intent of God that you be the custodian and the guardian of those children until the time they turn 18. Well, that's pretty non-disputable, isn't it?
Yep.
Okay, these are simple arguments you can make when you understand what's going on. So what else were you going to say there?
Well, mostly it's my wife and I are still united in our relationship, but again, we just... We're trying to protect our children and then protect our assets, because you had said something that during the marriage that your presumption is that we've made jointer, I guess, with the Crown or with public office, that anything created during the marriage becomes joint, in a sense, assets.
Yes,
is that correct?
The fruits of the union become, they claim property of the government. I'm not really sure about that. I'm going to claim that the fruits of the union would be governable by the government. Like to say, like, well, yeah, we made this much money with this union. Now I've got a claim to a portion of that, And so the government has, by like, default mediation authority over the fruits of the union, is kind of a different way I would say it. They don't own it. They have the right to mediate any disputes over that. Now, what happens if there's no dispute?
They have no right to mediate.
They have no right to mediate. Now, what happens if you and your husband there decide you want to dissolve the marriage contract by mutual consent before any possible disputes could arise, and tell them that you're just going to basically take your relationship out of the public and it's going to become completely private now, as well as every asset and everything that the union has brought the two of you?
Well, that's the plan that we wanted to do, is write a letter stating that.
Well, letters don't do anything. They don't recognize letters. Oaths, affirmations, asseverations, anything you want.
Affidavit,
there you go. So if the two of you were to both agree to dissolve the government union, all you have to do is send them notice of that.
Okay.
And you would, send that to the place that governs the marriage license, and I hope you know where that is.
Yeah.
I believe that's the Ministry of, what do they call it?
Health Services.
Health Services, BC, which is vital statistics.
There you go. Rescind both your signatures off that document mutually. So there's no, and make sure you both point out in a document you both even signed together, there is no dispute between the parties. You both agree to this 100% to every point. That is now the will of the parties. That is the law.
Now,
right?
Do we have to have a notary actually witness that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Why, did you not, Kate, priests, whoever you sign that in front of, are they not licensed to witness you signing?
Right.
Okay. And what is the law on that? So it was done.
That must be undone.
So it must be undone.
Okay. So does that answer your question, Tom?
Yeah, that was fantastic.
Yeah, that would preemptively remove the government from being able to operate on presumptions against you in the future, and that would, that would really piss them off.
Thanks for calling, Tom.
I'm on it.
Thanks for calling
thanks,
in, Tom,
Pete.
And we're going to move on to the next question.
Okay.
All right. Let's see here. What do we have? We got... I guess, is the highest court on the land, I presume, like your Queen's Bench? I don't even understand that question.
I do. And I think what they're getting to is I can claim for, I obviously can't for a fact, but I'm going to make my own personal claim. These courts are ours. They operate off our authority. And they're basically enforced by Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth, by her authority, because she's trustee. The courts will operate off of whatever jurisdiction we bring into it. If I am the plaintiff, the complaining party, and I clarify who I am, or I state for a fact who I am, I clarify my status, and I let the court know who I am, that is the authority I'm granting to the court to act. Okay? So... depending on who I am, and I don't allow them to operate off of presumptions that maybe I'm just a low-ranking officer of the crown that has no real rights. If I establish who I am, and the courts operate in the following manner, provincial court is the lowest form of law that there is. They only hear statutes. In the provincial summary conviction, they only hear statutes. When you get to the higher court, like the appeals court, and then the Supreme Court of that jurisdiction, of provincial court, people have to remember that there is no just Supreme Court. It's the Supreme Court of that jurisdiction. It's the highest you can go in that jurisdiction. Then they'll start to hear your common law arguments, right? Unless you have agreement of the parties beforehand. But when you go to Superior Court or Queen's Bench in other provinces, it's one or the other, depending where you are, Ontario Superior Court, some of the provinces are Queen's Bench, they will hear anything in that. Those are provincial courts still, but it's Queen's Bench now. It's a different jurisdiction. They'll hear, it's usually like you enforcing an equitable claim through your trust. That's why it's always such and such versus such and such, and both parties are spelled in all capital names. You only have the right to remedy through your person in these courts. The other jurisdiction after that gets a federal court, which is another animal altogether, which is a good one that we're going to be having some fun with here in the next little while, but I can't comment a lot on that right now. So there's the different jurisdictions, but a court will operate off of the authority and the jurisdiction that you bring into it as the plaintiff. I'm so-and-so, and what's more important than your name? Your status, your standing. Who are you? And why does the court care about who you are? Okay, that all has to be in your pleadings. Your pleadings is where you establish all this stuff, and that's where the jurisdiction is granted to the court. You're granting the jurisdiction to the court. Okay? That's what the jurisdiction is. It's your jurisdiction. You're bringing it into their court. It all comes from you. You are the authority. Okay, next.
I just want to actually remind our guests here, Dean, just a minute, because we're running down out of time and there are a lot of questions to cover. We're probably going to go into the overtime. But
I'll try to go a little quicker then. I'd like to get off here at 10 so I can get to writing some of my stuff tonight.
Okay, then I guess we're not going to be able to answer all the questions. We can cover them next episode, I guess. All right, next question then. What are the four types of court jurisdiction? It's a two-part question. Second part, what are the differences between in personam jurisdiction and rem jurisdiction?
You know what? I got a friend who's the expert in this, and I can never remember the difference between the two properly. One acts in one way and another acts in another way. Shit, you know what? I'm going to write that down, actually. I got a friend who's actually a bit of a specialist in this, and I leave that one to him.
Okay,
in personam and in rem. Those are the two different jurisdictions, and I can never remember.
All right, and the person who asked this is Ayan Ali. So, Ayan, just remind us next time. I guess you're going to look up that answer for him and give us another episode. Okay, here we go.
Yep, let's bring that back up on another episode, and I will have the answer for that.
Okay, New Agers asking, how do I handle the situation if a judge falsely imprisons you? They claim they have absolute immunity if it is done in good faith for the public good. This includes malicious or fraudulent behavior by their own laws. May be hard to handle while you're in jail if it happens.
Everybody usually winds up in jail for contempt of court at one point in time, but there is no such thing as contempt of court in statutory court. In provincial summary conviction, it's pretty much impossible for you to be in contempt of court because there is basically no one convened court. There's no real court. I've heard the arguments before. As soon as somebody brings, like a judge says, you know, shut your mouth or I'm going to hold you in contempt of court, or, you know, oh, is that civil or criminal? And if it's civil, who's the injured party? If it's criminal, where's the contract? Or, no, criminal, yeah, no. If it's criminal, who's the injured party? If it's civil, where's the contract? Blah, blah. They don't care. They're going to do anything. You got to remember that. It's about whether or not you know how to come after them for remedy afterwards. And you can just say, look, once again, I'm going to state for the record, I'm only here under force and duress of further physical harm. If you're going to start threatening me, I'm leaving. I'm supposed to be free to defend myself in any court. And if me just speaking is going to get me thrown in jail, then I'm leaving and I'm not coming back because you're obviously biased and not interested in law. In fact, maybe we should have a show cause hearing to find out whether or not you're even competent enough to sit on the bench if you think that threatening me is a proper course of action in a court of law. So just make them look like the idiots, like the aggressor. Ask if a judge threatens you with contempt of court, say, well, I'm just trying to defend myself. Do you equate justice with violence? Is that all you have, is physically threatening me because you can't answer my questions? See, that's your job, is to answer questions. Are you incompetent, perhaps? Can you not do your job and you want to make me liable for your incompetence? That'll piss them off. But you're right. Good, throw me in jail. But you're injuring me, just so you know. I don't consent. You're personally liable, and I'm going to sue you personally. Just remember that. You're free to do whatever you want, but you are not free to escape the consequences of your actions. And if you're going to order me arrested, I want that order in writing, and I want your signature on it because you're assuming liability for it. And you make sure I get a copy of that in writing. Next.
All right, Dean. This is a bit of a long question, but I promised this person that I would get this question on the air. They mailed it in like back on the 13th. First part of it is proving the corporate city limits. How can a person exist inside of a corporation? Is my person a subsidy of said city, county, or state? I should give you a little bit of a preamble here. It says, I have a few questions for Dean during the Sunday show. I don't know how much Dean will be able to answer with respect to the USA, but some of this may apply in Canada. So this is an American gentleman asking these questions. So his first part of, regarding corporate city limits, how can a person exist inside of a corporation? Is his person a subsidy of said city, county, or state?
Is his person a what?
A subsidy of
a
said
subsidy,
city.
A subsidiary, I think, is what he's probably meaning. No, it is not a subsidiary. And this is how I explain that. Your person was born free and equal to all other persons, okay? Pretend you opened up a coffee shop. It's your private, personal coffee shop. It is your name, cafe. Your name, all capital letters, cafe. And then at one point in time, you decide, you know what? Man, Tim Hortons does really good business. I'm going to see if I can turn my coffee shop into one of their franchises. Because then I can put Tim Hortons' name on my window. I'll own the franchise rights to the store, but I'll have to abide by Tim Hortons' franchise policy. Okay? And then you do that, and then your store becomes part of the Tim Hortons franchise, and you're benefiting from it. You guys have a contract. But then you decide maybe after your contract term is up that maybe you just don't want to be a franchise of Tim Hortons anymore because the clientele are all cheap losers and you preferred, you know, your less busy cafe before you became Tim Hortons. So you can leave and go back to being just your own private cafe again. This is no different than what the person is. It's yours to control and do what you want with. Honor your contracts. But the problem is they probably don't have a contract. So I hope that little scenario helped. On to the next part.
If jurisdiction can be challenged at any time, how can a future proceeding to determine jurisdiction be stopped if the challenge is raised during proceeding?
Yeah, remember, you can always go back to correct a mistake, even after conviction. You can always go back to correct a mistake. That's what math is. You got to remember, all the courts are doing here is accounting. These are all just ledger entries. That's all the courtroom is doing. Everything they're doing is for the purpose of doing accounting ledger entries on a book somewhere in the back room. If that's all they're doing and there's a mistake, that means the ledger is wrong. The ledger needs to be corrected. Anytime you're doing a math equation, I don't care how many centuries 2 plus 2 has equaled 4. If somebody comes along to let us know, oh, wait, no, actually, there's a mistake here. There's a mistake at the beginning of this equation. It turns out that all these centuries, 2 plus 2 is really equal to 5. Well, then that has to be corrected.
Next part. If I am an employee of a government, how can I be held liable or accountable for not adhering to their statutes?
When you're on duty, when you're working for the government, when you're actually on duty, I would say you have to obey any policies of the actual program you're working under. It's not just blanket jurisdiction. It's only the policies of the program you're actually working under. When you go home at the end of the day, you're no longer on duty once you take that hat off. The minute you click out of that clock, you punch out. You're off duty. There's shit. You become a private person, a private citizen again, and nothing applies to you until you go on, put on the public servant hat. And you are paid hourly for your services. And then while you're being paid, you no longer have human rights because you're being paid to perform a function that comes with duties and obligations. And you're getting valuable consideration because you're getting a paycheck. Next.
How does a government exercise jurisdiction over the corporate person?
Presumptions and contract law.
Okay. How would you successfully argue and prove lack of standing over you or your corporate person in a court, regardless of the subject matter jurisdiction?
Yeah. I think we covered that pretty much ad nauseum tonight.
Okay.
Again, it's not the corporation. They're coming at you through the corporation. But anytime, if you look at the charges are going to be against an officer, always.
Okay. This question came in from Australia on the 15th. Tony, I'm in Australia, and I always love to keep up with Dean's activities. I have attempted to use some strategy in court recently and just have to learn how to nail the third-party interlopers to the wall in the near future. I haven't seen the topic for next week, but my question is, would Dean be able to give some attack strategy aimed at my... Oh, I think this is more of a personal question here. Yeah, we'll leave that one. That's a bit of a personal question. has it been determined who has jurisdiction over our trust funds, and explain the topic if time permits? I guess you covered that one too, didn't you?
Kind of, yeah. That's another matter altogether. The actual trust, that's the trustee grantor relationship. That's probably something we should talk about at a whole different. Holy shit, I couldn't cover that if we had a month.
Okay, so we'll come back to that one. And last question from the emails: since the banking elite are the main instigators through puppet governments for the start and profiteering from wars, how can we stop the legal wars if we don't challenge the banks?
Aha. You can't. You can put a limit on it. Actually, the banks in conjunction with the government is how they're getting access to the trust accounts or the unlimited credit, if you want to put it that way. You got to remember, it's all owed back to you, though. The bankers are just making money off of administrating your account, off of no different than a bank charges service fees for any other bank account you might have. That's all the international bankers are doing. All this money that the government is borrowing at interest is owed to us. The banks have to collect that for us. That's why they have to pay money, the government, the interest on the debt. I'd say if you want to stop the government from accessing an unlimited credit supply, then maybe we should start putting conditions on our deposits. If it's our deposits they're borrowing unlimited credit off, contact the bank once you've established who you are, you're standing with the person, and cut off their access to cheap, easy credit. Right? If somebody gave me an unlimited credit card with zero interest, I would sign a check for the entire planet that same day. But then I don't really own the planet then, do I? Because I still have to pay off that debt I just ran up to buy it. Okay, so that's why it makes that impossible anyways. But still, that's how you cut them off. Start putting conditions that we are the ones to be imposing conditions, but we don't do it. The government doesn't have free reign of anything. They do right now because we haven't put any conditions on what we own. You want to use my car? Let's start talking about conditions. Because right now, the way things are, they've had your keys for a long time, and they thought they could do anything because we didn't give them any conditions, right? Even our fathers used to give us the car keys and say, have it back by 10. Well, we didn't even do that with the government. We just said, here's the car keys. I may or may not ever come back. Okay? And if the bank is managing this all for you, the Bank of Canada, then I'll give you a couple of good hints as to who you should maybe contact.
All right. I think that's it for questions that we can take. Unfortunately, we can't go into the extra hour. Speaking of that, it looks like if the shows are going to get popular like this, Dean, we're going to have to do longer shows, which means we have to upgrade our Block Talk, our Global Fact plan.
Or we do it more often.
Oh, we're doing more often, that too. So, ladies and gentlemen, what I want to tell you here, if you want to join our group, because Dean is also part of it, there's the link I just put there. That's for our fan page. That's where all the questions usually, we ask people to put them on that page, and then I bring them here and present them to Dean.
Yep.
all the episodes are posted on that fan page. And from that fan page, you can get the link for the actual discussion group. You guys can't discuss anything on the fan page. Only admins can post there. But go to the fan page, like the page, please, and then from there you can go to the group and join the discussions there as well.
Okay, and actually, I'll cut in here real quick. A couple people asked in the chat room, I saw this. If anybody actually wants to help out with donations in the meantime until I have something else up and running, right now my only PayPal donation button is at t4tt.info's website, my buddy Lee over there in the UK. You have to go to my page where all my videos are for guest speakers and then click here to watch my videos. There's a donate button on there that goes straight to me. And that stuff goes towards, I don't know, paying for flights to go privately prosecute out in BC, which is going to cost me $1,000 by the time I get home. All this stuff's out of my own pocket. So, and all that information, whenever I learn, everything is filtered right down to everybody else that's going to be in those courses and whatnot too. So.
Okay, so that's it. We're down the last 6 seconds. I'd like to thank you all for listening. Be sure to check out our archive files from previous episodes with Dean. We'll be back next Monday. And we're going to finish off here with a quick song. And thank you all for listening, and see you next time.
All right. Have a good night, everybody.
Don't you know that you can count me out? You know it's gonna be alright. 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 Say you got a real solution. Money for people with minds that hate. All I can tell you is, brother, you have to wait. All right. All right. All right.
You're listening to Global Fact Radio.